Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Kim Clijsters, yeah, she was my idol. Like, I wanted to be like...
But she was a hardcore player, wasn't she?
Yeah, so was I.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. We're with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up from 7:30, Ryle Nugent and Mike Sherry are going to join us for Wednesday night rugby. The build-up to the First Lions test in Australia has gone up a notch. We unofficially have Alliance 23. A lot of people reporting the same 23, so we've got good clues as to what team Andy Farrell is going to announce tomorrow, so we'll discuss that with the lads from 7:30. After 8 o'clock then, Richie Hogan is going to dial in from Vietnam because he was so eager to give us his pre-All-Ireland hurling final takes. He's going to predict who's going to win it. He's going to talk about his own All-Ireland hurling final memories as well and go through the matchup. So a bumper preview with Richie from 8. And then after 9 o'clock, Keira Grant will talk Euro 2025 with us. And Nathan is going to be live for the evening to update us on what's happening at Windsor Park between Linfield and Shelburne. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to get in touch on WhatsApp, Cameron Hill is here in studio. Hello, Cameron.
A very good evening, Owen.
And Nathan Murphy is live from Windsor Park. Nathan, how are you doing?
Evening, Owen.
So this is a really, really huge test of Shelburne's nerve tonight, if nothing else. Like, I wouldn't say 1-0 was flattering to Linfield last week, given Shelburne didn't create a million chances, but they were certainly the better team. They probably deserved a 2 or 3 goal lead going up to Linfield. So the fact that it's only 1 just changes the picture on this completely before kickoff.
Yeah, they certainly had, I think, enough of the possession and the territory and even the chances. 18 was the final total in terms of shots on goal. Now, not enough of them on target, not enough testing the goalkeeper. But the difference in coming up here to Windsor Park with a 2-0 or a 3-0 lead is seismic, particularly considering the one big difference between these two teams is the match fitness. The fact that Shelburne are in the middle of their season, that Linfield are still in their pre-season. So you would expect that Shelburne should be able to finish these games stronger and then would have been able to play it at their own tempo. And you're probably right, it turns into maybe as much of a mental battle now as it does actually a battle of skill and which team is going to be tactically better. It's an enormous game. It's without question Shell's biggest European game in 2 decades. It's hard to say it's maybe bigger than the final night of the season up in Derry, but it's not far off that. And it's certainly far more important financially and also in a sporting sense. Listen, we talk an awful lot about the money and what it's worth, and you're guaranteed another 700 grand if they progress through here. But I think in a sporting sense, it's worth far more than that, because at the very least, they're going to go on to play Carabag in the next qualifying round of the Champions League. After that, they'd step down to the Europa League, even if they were to lose. And even if they were to lose that, they would end up in the final playoff round for the Conference League and basically go the route Shamrock Rovers went last year, and with a great chance of European football right the way through the winter. So this is a game and this is a night that will probably come to define Shelburne's season and maybe in some ways define part of this era, the post-Damien Duff beginning of the Joey O'Brien era. It's absolutely huge stakes tonight.
It certainly is. Kickoff is around 39 minutes away at this point. What can you tell us about the team news?
Just the one change for Shelburne, and that's Tyreek Wilson coming in at left back. Could have surprised because Sean Gannon was suspended last week. Obviously, vastly experienced player. He was up doing the pre-match press conference yesterday, so I think there was an expectation that Gannon would come in, but there's just the one change on the left-hand side. Wilson comes in from James Norris, who's on loan from Liverpool. So Conor Cairns in goal. Looks like they'll stick with the back three again with Mark Coyle alongside Paddy Barrett and Cameron Ledwich. Evan Caffrey then and Tyreek Wilson are the full backs. JJ Lunny, Kieran McEnroy in the middle of midfield with Harry Wood and Ali Coote in behind Meepo Adebeko, who of course scored that all-important goal at Talca Park last Wednesday night.
Yeah, Sean Gannon not being included in the starting 11 is a bit of a surprise. Just given the experience, that probably would have been quite convenient given the conversation we've just had about Shelburne trying to hold their nerve up there.
It's probably a couple of factors in that. One is that maybe Joey O'Brien looks at the dominance they had in large parts last week and felt that tactically it had set up just fine for them having Mark Coyle in as part of that back three, and it makes sense to not change a winning team. They didn't have to play last weekend, so you know they're all going to be fresh and ready to go once again with the seven-day break. Also, maybe he's thinking deeper into this game and having a player of Gannon's experience to come on in the final 20 minutes, and who knows, maybe even extra time as well, and all of that, and being that really calm head in a Shells team that is fairly inexperienced in European ties of this magnitude, albeit it is a domestic game of sorts. So there's probably a few things that have gone on there and what Joey O'Brien's thinking. I've no doubt we'll see Sean Gannon at some stage during this game.
Is the drive from Royal Portrush down to Belfast, down to Windsor Park, one of the great drives, or did he take the quick route and avoid the coast completely?
No, I certainly didn't take the Causeway Coast and do the Game of Thrones tour stop-offs and a quick ramble down the Giant's Causeway. I came straight through Ballymoney and Ballymena and all of these places on the motorway. Yeah, I've had enough scenery. It was the most gorgeous day up at Royal Portrush. I was out in the course at about 8 o'clock this morning. Shane Lowry was there very early practicing, and there was barely a cloud in the sky for most of the day. One of those days where you wonder how beneficial the practice would be to the players, because I think we're going to see different conditions tomorrow. We're probably going to see quite a bit of rain in Portrush tomorrow, but the scenery was just absolutely stunning. Everybody was having their 99s. Porter Carrington, a veteran of his 26-27 Open Championship, says without question, Royal Portrush has the best 99s of any Open Championship venue.
Right. Okay,
so that's
right.
High praise from a two-time major champion.
These take that, Royal Birkdale.
You know, yeah, exactly. Screw you, said Andrews. So listen, it's got to that stage of the week. It's been a long week up there, considering, you know, McIlroy and Lowry, we spoke to them sort of lunchtime on Monday. So, you know, by Wednesday, everyone's a little bit delirious, and Potter Carrington talking 99s is sort of, yeah, we're at that stage of the week. Let's just get on with the golf.
I did see a photograph of some American golf journalists getting photobombed by John Rahm. So he's obviously in good spirits, but also all the American hacks were on the pints. So they come over this side of the Atlantic and they're on holidays here covering the game. So it's up to serious journalists like yourself to keep the players in check while all the Americans figuratively have their feet up for a week like this.
Oh, absolutely, Owen. You know, professionalism is my middle name on weeks like this. Yeah, I didn't make it to the Harbour Bar last night. I was in there on Monday night. I had one of their massively overpriced pints of Guinness, £8. Had a burger and chips as well that set me back about £30. I thought this is a bit extreme, and I opened up the BBC website, and there it was, that they're under massive pressure to reduce their prices because of the gouging that has gone on. But it doesn't seem, they obviously have a better expense system, the American Journal. It's one of the great things about Open Championship Zone is that obviously they always take place in quite remote locations. So there's not a huge amount, listen, Portrush isn't a small town, but there's not 50 different restaurants that you can choose from. And everybody sort of congregates in and around the same place. And that's players, caddies, families. So you're sitting in the restaurant on Monday night and JJ Spawn is sitting over in the corner having his dinner, and Xander Schauffele was just walking out the door, having been in for a quick pint. Like, if you're coming up, and it'll calm down, obviously, over the next few days. But next time it comes back, which for Royal Portrush might be a little while, I think. But when it comes to Port Marnock, maybe in the next decade, like, that's one of the great parts of this. You get early in the week, everybody's very chilled out, everybody's savoring it. And the Americans, listen, they have this sort of mythical impression of this part of the world that, like, the, you know, these courses are carved in God's country in a way that they could never imagine in the US, and like it's the sort of coverage really money couldn't buy for Tourism Ireland. So yeah, they certainly enjoy themselves when they're over here, and you know, we might enjoy ourselves a little bit as well.
Was the £8 worth it?
Plastic glass. I think we're going to hear from Matt Wallace earlier. He was in there as well and was very disappointed with the plastic glass. And I did, not for me to make this guarantee, but if he does win this week, I guaranteed him that Guinness would supply him with his own personal range of glass, pint glasses for the celebrations.
Yeah, he will also have a jug from which to drink should he come out on top.
Exactly.
Decant his Guinness.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Nathan, you might hang on the line there. You are up in Windsor Park for anybody who's just joining us, looking ahead to Shelburne's second leg against Linfield. It's a 7:45 kickoff, and Nathan will have updates throughout the evening as well, but we shall turn our attention to the news round, which is here with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. You are starting with the football tonight, Cameron.
Yeah, and as you've heard there, Owen, Shelburne with a 1-0 lead heading into tonight's return leg of their Champions League qualifier against Linfield. The winner of this tie will set up a second round clash with Azerbaijani side Karabakh. Now, extra time and penalties are in store for the teams if Linfield can find that equaliser this evening. And head coach Joey O'Brien has confirmed that the whole squad practice penalties ahead of tonight's trip to Windsor Park.
Yeah, we did, yeah. So if we're here, I always think we have done them, but it's mad that I think most penalty shootouts that I've ever been involved in, I've ended up taking one because you're on the pitch when it comes to the end of the game. Mostly, the way it works out, after if it goes that far, 120 minutes, you're attacking players. Sometimes they're the ones that get taken off. So when you're going around to your five, and probably not the first five that you'd pick, you know, and think of the pressure at that moment and stuff like that is... whether you practice them or not, I don't think it has any bearing on it.
Yeah, it is also the case, Nathan, that the second leg being away from home, if it's gone to penalties, things haven't gone overly well for Shells tonight. So that would really be a bit of bottle they need to show to actually win in that sort of scenario up there. We just have appeared to have lost Nathan. We'll be back to him very shortly.
He's going to get another £8 pint.
Exactly. We have some Euros action tonight, Cameron.
Yeah, the quarterfinals of the Euros get underway in Switzerland this evening. Owen, with Norway taking on Italy at 8 o'clock. Norway, the two-time champions versus twice runners-up Italy. That game kicks off at 8 o'clock in Geneva.
Yeah, some of these Euros quarterfinals are extremely hard to call. Certainly the next two, it's equal enough. When you look at Norway and Italy, Norway just slight favourites, but really no shame in coming second to Spain in the group for Italy. And then Sweden, England looks like it's hard enough to call as well. Spain, strong favourites against Switzerland, as you'd imagine, but Switzerland being tournament hosts. And then France, Germany should be a cracker, and France slight favourites for that. So it's actually a really, really good quarterfinal lineup. As I say, Keir Grant will be with us after 9 o'clock to react to what you've seen so far in Norway, Italy, and then look ahead to the other three quarterfinals. The Tour de France.
Yeah, Ireland's Ben Healy retaining the yellow jersey after today's stage 11 of the Tour de France. Norway's Jonas Abrahamsen won in a sprint finish to today's 156-kilometre route that started and ended in Toulouse. Healy still holds that 29-second lead over defending champion Tadej Pogačar, who crashed with 4 kilometres to go, but the general classification group then stopped to allow the Slovenian rider to catch up. Speaking afterwards, Healy found today's stage particularly challenging.
Yeah, honestly, I think I've lost a few years off my life after today. This was pretty stressful. But the team just did a super effort to keep me in it, even when I missed the split early on. But from then on, we were on the ball the whole day. And a few little attacks in the final there, but able to stay with the group. And just really happy that I've managed to hold on to yellow for another day. The family's all flown out just to see me in yellow, which is, it's just so special. And just been a crazy, crazy couple of days.
This was really interesting. So this happens late into the stage when Pogačar goes down, and as you mentioned there, the GC riders all wait up for him. Part of me, in terms of trying to bring the paranoia to this, thinks that if one of the real GC contenders actually had the yellow jersey and we were into the business end of the competition, there's absolutely no chance this would have happened. But they're looking at Ben Healy and they're like, it doesn't matter, this guy's not going to win yellow anyway. come the end, he's not going to be driving down Champs-Élysées in his yellow jersey in 2 weeks' time. Sportsmanship is basically easier to come by at a time like this. Am I being cynical on that front?
Maybe the stakes are relatively low, so it's sort of like, we can show the good side and have top 10 respect moments in the Tour de France into a compilation here.
Yeah, well, I suppose if it's late in the stage, I guess the stakes were so high in terms of the stage, and they could have really devoured any sort of time that Pogačar might have had on them. So maybe that's why they did it. It would have been too severe a punishment for what didn't look like a bike handling fault.
No, it looks like he hit the back wheel of Tobias Johannessen. And I think it was just a general consensus among the riders that they said, no, we'll wait. And Pogačar kind of thanked them he was very grateful. And you could hear it on the team radio when you were watching the coverage on TG Cahir.
Respect to the bunch,
exactly. Which was very never give a sucker an even break. Thanks for that, guys. Now I'm going to absolutely mince you in the next 10 stages. But an interesting one. I saw it being called woke nonsense online. So I don't know.
one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I haven't seen that happen too many times. So the peloton in good hands, good hearts as well in the peloton at the moment. Cricket then.
Yeah, Cricket Ireland and the Northern Cricket Union say they are dismayed and disappointed at the cancellation of a cross-community summer camp. So North Down Cricket Club cancelled the camp after an Orange Lodge objected to the inclusion of a small group of children from a GAA club. Now, Cricket Ireland chair Brian McNeice has revealed that they are committed to following through on the initiative. Irish Cricket's governing body and the NCU have also approached each Belfast GAA about plans for a similar camp at Stormont.
Yeah, this is absolutely bonkers, really. The North Down Cricket Club, whatever points they've tried to make here or any beliefs that they've had, to do it with kids suffering in this manner is absolutely idiotic. I'm not sure who they were trying to change the minds of here or who they were trying to bring along on their journey. Because if you actually looked at the statement that came out from the cricket club, or at least some of the verbals to do with it, like they talk about the GAA needing to take meaningful steps to ensure that it is inclusive and sensitive to the identity of Protestant, Unionist and Loyalist communities. Like you can say that stuff, like by all means, that's like honest opinion and the lived experience of many people in the North, I suspect, certainly in places that are dominated by Gaelic games. That is a totally fair opinion to have. But then to go out and basically make the kids suffer as a result of that opinion is just a totally wrong way to go about this. And they've now just made a rod for their own back where nobody will really have any sympathy for that point of view. Like, it's actually not that hard to find information or people in the GAA who would be sympathetic to that point of view, you know, about the GAA needing to be a little bit more inclusive. Like Charlotte Burns himself has been speaking about this over the last number of years. Like, I remember when he did that brilliant interview on the GAA Social podcast with Thomas Niblock and Oisin na Conville. And he was talking about, you know, the potential of not sacrificing, but making allowances for things like the flag and the anthem. And he was talking about how, as an organisation, we need to have sympathy and understanding for the culture of the Protestant people in Northern Ireland. And if we respect their culture, maybe they will respect ours, is basically the long and short of his point. He said that there's a significant British population in the north of Ireland who feel they're under siege, that is to quote him, and they are misunderstood in many respects, and they become outraged and furious about many things because they feel their backs are against the wall. So he, as president of the GAA, has come out and said that he is open to a new situation in Ireland, in a new Ireland that wants to be fully inclusive of all traditions and faiths and make allowances on his part. So that has been said from the GAA president. Dialogue channels are open when the GAA president says that. So for you to come along with a summer camp and say the GAA kids aren't welcome here just takes this whole conversation two steps further back. And I don't know, I wouldn't blame anybody for just saying this is just too much of a mess to even have a conversation with right now.
Well, even things that are supposedly, like as Nathan has alluded to, like Port Rush being in this incredible light and getting this incredible tourist opportunity and showcasing what the Irish landscape can be, and they've had to alter Saturday's play because of a Loyalist parade. Like there is just a degree of the Loyalist side of that community being a bit of a PR disaster from a sports point of view. And like, you'd wonder, and again, it's a total hypothetical now, what would have happened if Casement Park was built in time and they were scheduled to host games? Would they have found a way to be objectionable in some form or capacity based on the ideas of tradition and their values? It boggles the mind.
Yeah. Is there a big North Down Cricket Club contingent there at Windsor Park tonight, Nathan?
Yeah, well, the music is so loud I can barely hear what you're saying, but I thank you for coming to me when I look out at the Linfield fans in blue down to my left-hand side who've come all over to the corner of the stand towards the Shelburne supporters, the 1,000 or so Shelburne supporters clad in red. And, you know, football unites or something, I think, is what we're looking at right now.
Yeah.
Possibly something like that. We can look to football to lead as an example over the course of the next few hours, or maybe not. Yeah, there's probably a lot going on in this part of the world right now. And as you say, like they're starting play early on Saturday because of a parade taking place. And, you know, a lot of the American journalists I know are very interested in this and the peculiarities of it. I had offered to bring a few of them down here to this match to, again, show them, you know, the different side of life. But they decided to stay in the Harbour Bar instead, which is maybe the better option.
Okay. You've tried to make friends with American journalists and they've rejected you already before the advances could even be made, Nathan. That's totally fine.
That's the salient point here.
I've mentioned one Armagh man. Plenty of Armagh men will be interested by this piece of breaking news really this evening, Cameron.
Yeah, Kieran Donaghy reportedly stepping away as a selector for the Armagh senior footballers. The Tralee native served as attack coach with the Orchard County for the past five seasons, and he helped Kieran McGeaney's side end a 22-year wait for Sam Maguire last term.
So this is surprise news and maybe surprise timing. He is going to be appearing alongside Tommy and James and Paddy next week in Croke Park at our live roadshow. Nice little segue there. Himself and Mark McHugh are along. Tickets still available for the Football Show Roadshow. If not, there's going to be a swap shop beforehand. I'm sure that'll pop up. But Donaghy stepping away now. I would have thought that he might have held off until he saw what happened in the All-Ireland final in 2 weeks' time. Because, I don't know, I'm guessing here, completely guessing, but I would suspect that a man who's got involved in coaching so early in his career wants to manage his native Kerry at some stage down the line. And I think he would do a magnificent job of managing Kerry or being involved in Kerry at some stage down the line. But the one thing we don't know is that when is that job going to come up again? Like, if Kerry win the All-Ireland this year, Jack O'Connor could go to the county board and say, I've won two of the last three All-Irelands. Find me somebody else who's got a better record than me, and could he stay on? I'm just saying it's not unthinkable that that's the case. Now, his term is up, and as it stands, you know, it could be a case that they win the All-Ireland and he walks away. So I don't know, I'm connecting dots there that maybe don't exist, and there's a fact here that Donaghy lives in Kerry and trying to get up and down to Armagh and trying to base himself as close to Armagh as possible might have been a tricky situation to be in. So that might have been the main reason here.
Donaghy to Dublin will be wild, won't it?
Oh my God, don't say that. Don't say that. No chance. That is not happening. Meanwhile, there's other news actually coming out of Kerry today.
Yeah, Kerry and Cairns O'Rahilly footballer Tommy Walsh has brought the curtain down on his stellar playing career. The forward claimed two All-Ireland titles with the Kingdom and was a crucial part of the side that lifted the Sam Maguire in 2009 along with Donaghy in that full forward line. He also helped Cairns O'Rahilly's to a Munster club triumph in 2022. The club confirmed the news in a statement this evening, saying his retirement marks the end of an era for Kerry and for Gaelic games.
Yeah, one of the greats, and put in a great shift at Cairns O'Rahilly's for a couple of years there as well since he's been home from Australia. The GAA Palestine story then.
Yeah, the GAA Palestine say their planned trip to Ireland will not go ahead. It's after their visa applications were denied by the Department of Justice. The group had lodged an appeal with the department but were due to leave the West Bank today and say time has now run out to make alternative arrangements.
We should move on to the sailing.
Massive day for host sailor Eve McMahon. She says she's delighted to have secured a gold medal at the Los Angeles Grand Slam. McMahon edged out Great Britain's Hannah Snellgrove on the final day to take her maiden Grand Slam victory. The event was being staged on the same waters as the course for the Olympic Games in 3 years' time. Now, McMahon adds the gold to the World Championship bronze she picked up in China earlier this year. She explained to me back in May how her success this season is down to a tweak in her approach.
We had two pretty major competitions before the World Championships, and just some costly errors cost me to getting into the medal race and fighting for a medal position. So we kind of just took a step back and said, okay, what do we need to change? We had limited time, obviously, before our World Championships, but myself and my coach did a really good job of kind of just dissecting my technique and learning how to blend in, because it was catching the eyes of the umpires, and we did it really well, and it obviously paid off then in China at the Worlds.
And we shall wrap up on the golf.
Yeah, the possibility of Portmarnock hosting a future Open Championship will become clearer by the end of this year. That's according to the RNA Chief Executive Mark Darbin, who says a feasibility study is continuing around the suitability of the North Dublin Links.
Nathan, if you can hear us there, this is going to be absolutely fantastic. I know it's been in the pipeline for quite some time, so it's not surprising news, but it looks like it's only a matter of time now before we actually see this happen.
Yeah, I think there's still a debate as to just how long it will be. There's been some speculation that maybe 2031, which I think would be Porter Carrington's last Open Championship, that might have been the target that they were aiming for. Now, there has been a change at the top of the RNA, and there's a lot going on in world golf. And I think there's a feeling that maybe that has slowed down the plan. We might be looking at maybe sort of 2034, 2035 before the Open Championship gets to Portmarnock. It'll be interesting as well whether they come back to Royal Portrush between now and then. It's obviously only 6 years since they were last at Royal Portrush. It was such a success. They were in a rush to get back, but it's a huge operation that essentially shuts down the golf course for months on end. So it's either going to be a situation, you feel, where we'll have quite a few Open Championships coming to the island of Ireland in the next decade, or we might not have any, and we're waiting for that Portmarnock deal to get done. But I think once that feasibility study is finished, expect an announcement quite quickly, and then Portmarnock will be on the rota, and it's going to be up there with the biggest sporting events that the country has, and it's probably going to happen every 7-8 years. So it's a brilliant, brilliant thing, and hopefully sooner the better.
Yeah. You've one last story for us, Cameron, on the golf front.
Yeah, Wyndham Clark has been banned indefinitely from Oakmont Country Club for smashing two lockers during this year's US Open. So the 2023 champion made an apology following pictures emerging on social media of the damage, but the Pittsburgh venue has gone a step further. They released a statement saying reinstatement would be contingent on Mr. Clark fulfilling a number of specific conditions, including full repayment for damages, a meaningful contribution to a charity of the board's choosing, and the successful completion of counselling or anger management session. The major is set to return to Oakmont in 2033.
Okay, I want to come back to so in 2033. We'll circle back to this. We put it under running order for then. Cameron, thank you for that. Nathan will be back over to Windsor Park very shortly indeed. We're going to have Wednesday Night Rugby with Ryle and Mike after the break.